The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Hi, everybody. It's nice to see everyone tonight, and nice to see some new faces for me as well, and I may be a new face for you. And who knows, my face may have totally changed from the first period of Zazen until now. So my name is Joanne, and the reason I might be a new face for you, and I feel like I've been saying this a while now, but it's still true, I moved away about 8 years ago. Moved out to Provincetown, where Geisho and I actually kind of met, really, and had a little sitting group out there that was an affiliate of the Zendo, and then that kind of became untenable, and my husband couldn't do it anymore, and so we said, we're out. And so a couple years back, we made the move to Ulster County, Saugerties, bought a place in Woodstock, and sold it in less than a year, and I'm now residing in New Paltz. So that's the long and the short of the story. And I'm getting closer and closer to the city. Who knows, maybe I'll be in Newburgh and then, you know, Westchester, and I might just be on the Upper West Side before you know it. But after 25 years of living in the city, I'm really happy to be up in New Paltz. Not that I don't love being down here at the mothership with all of you. So in New Paltz, this property that I live on has a little secondary property, and I thought, we're going to have another little sitting group. So Manchin, who you may know, is living up in Ulster County now as well. So it's sort of the two of us. So we've had this soft opening of a Zendo, and it's really delightful. It's like family. So I don't have to worry about ruffling anyone's feathers with this Zen stuff, or you know, everybody kind of knows what's going on. And you might have saw when I was sitting down, I felt my obi. You know, there's a thousand layers, one reason not to ordain. And there's, you know, now we've got Velcro obis that hold the kimono in place. Back in the day, it was all tied. But up there, I wear my old robes. This is a new one, and I'm still getting used to it. It's this fabric that fabric. That implies that there's some sort of cloth in it, but it's all plastic. So it will never wrinkle, which is fantastic. This is what monks want. And I can pretty much roll it up in a ball, and it comes out looking pretty okay. But up there, I wear my nice robes, but they're old and they're ratty. And the obi that holds the kimono together almost invariably lands on the floor, you know, but it's family, so it's okay. I can just kind of kick it to the side and get it during kinhin, and you know, nothing is exposed. I'm covered. So it's just Manchin and I, and we're kind of finding our way as we determine what's needed. You know, who is this crazy, wild, diverse community that is New Paltz? And you know, how do we stay true to this form? But how do we also offer what's skillful for the community we're in? So it's particularly nice to be unchallenged in this space by any new and different people. So recently, speaking of being challenged by new and different people, I work in the school system now, so I have summers off. It's incredible. I work as a nurse, and I work with a kid with some difference in ability. And this is the first time that I've in quite some time been like, wow, I don't have to go to work for a couple of months. This is kind of amazing, and I get to play setting up the new house. But we're host to my mother-in-law, and three of the kids, all relatively adult with the exception of one, two in college, one going into high school. And so they were all at the house. My mother-in-law was born and raised in Lincoln, Illinois, has never really left Lincoln, Illinois, is a very conservative Republican, very Christian. We pray a lot when she's around, and that's good. Ish, and it's all good. You know, she's a lovely, lovely woman who cares deeply for her children and her grandchildren and for her son's husband, and you know, it's all good. But as you can tell, a little trying. So We're friends on Facebook, and that's an awesome place to be friends, although a really difficult and strange place to be friends as well, as many of you probably have participated in this social media phenomena. So she'll post something about, if you see a veteran today, you know, thank them for their service, you know, make America great again, something like that. I should preface, she doesn't post, she reposts. So my husband has to remind me repeatedly, these are not her thoughts. These are thoughts of someone else's that she's reposting. They're not, you know, generated by her. And I'm like, mm-hmm. So thank a veteran, like. I can like this, I can thank a veteran, absolutely. Thank you for that service, that's an incredible thing. I can do that, I can like that. And then maybe the next thing, you know, a few threads in is, you know, we military veterans don't have any money, and these guys that are taking a knee during the, you know, national anthem, it's an atrocity, da 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 da. You know, so I take a couple of breaths, and I think of friends of mine who are veterans and how difficult they have a difficult time with people taking a knee, and I can understand it. So these I just let slip by. I don't have to respond to everything she posts, so that just kind of slides by. And then maybe a few posts later, there's all I want to drink. I just want to drink wine and save animals. She loves animals probably more than I do. And I'm like, heart, confetti emoji, like, you know, whatever things I can do to say, I'm with you. We're together. We share something. We love animals and wine. Like, isn't that wonderful? We can like that. And then, you know, a bit later, there will be a photo of a woman in hijab at a bank, and she'll say, how is this, you know, she'll repost, how is this acceptable in this country? You know, if you can't take the oath of office on a Bible, you know, then you shouldn't be in office. So how do I respond to that? You know, this is my husband's mother. I want things to be okay in the household. And he's actually jumped in when I've shown him things on my phone, where I'm like, look at what she said, look at what you just said, and has taken my phone and responded, which has not gone well, because then I've had to say, you need to go back, all the bingo ladies are looking at the horrible things that I've said, and I didn't say them, so clean that up. So Scott will clean it up, and you know, he's done multiple attempts to kind of correct his mom and say, look, you can't use that word, you can't, you know, this is not acceptable. You have to, you know, rein it in, mom. We're not in 1950, you know, it's a different time. And she sort of shrugs and, you know, is like, I come from a different time, a different culture. You know, these are the words we use. This is the way we describe things. You know, I'm not racist. I'm not that person. You know, and there's not much you can do about it. So after 4 days, two of which was just with my mom and one nephew while the others came into the city, I dropped her off at LaGuardia and I went home and I slept for about 24 hours. I was exhausted. I think hosting in the best of situations is exhausting. And in this, again, I reiterate, love my mother-in-law, love her to death. And yet it's very trying to be in her presence. And I can look at what generates her behavior. You know, she's 82 years old, she's a depression baby, very insular, have to stay safe, gotta protect family, anything outside of this, you know, is dangerous. It makes me think about our Zendo, you know, and how it's starting and how it's so nice to just have family there and not be challenged by someone new coming through the door. So, for two nights I had her alone and you know, where do I hold on? Where do I let go? Where do we hold on in the presence of other people and where do we let go? You know, so the two nights that I had her, I was not going there. We put on the Hallmark Channel, which I found is 86, put that on Christmas in July, whew, kept the margaritas going, and we were golden. There was really not a lot that had to happen. And that was the way I dealt with that in that moment. That was the choice I made. So where are the moments we can avoid this picking and choosing mind, and where are the moments where we have no choice but to dive into this mind of picking and choosing. So I use the words picking and choosing because they come from a text that some of you may have heard of before, a very famous Zen one called the Shinshin Ming, a great text that begins with, "The great way is not difficult, simply avoid picking and choosing." Easier said than done. So when we're doing this, are we actually making conscious choices? Are we saying, this is what I'm going to do? Or are we in repost mind? Are we just clicking on an idea that's conditioned, or that is conditioned by our culture to say, that's who we are, what I represent, whether that culture is whatever it is, you know? And my culture could shift 25 times in the day, and my opinions and my ideas could shift depending where I am, whether it's the coffee house or on the street or in the Zendo, constantly changing. So what portion of our actions and reactions are conditioned, and what portions are genuine responses to things as they are right now in this moment? So a monk once asked Master Unman a question. And he started to say, "The light serenely shines over the whole universe." And before he'd even finished the first line, Master Unman suddenly interrupted him and said, "Isn't that the poem of Chosetsu Shusai?" And the monk said, "Yes, it is." And Unman said, "You've missed it." Later, Master Shishun took up this koan and said, "Now tell me, why has this monk missed it?" So our reposting, if you will, whether it's on Facebook or whether it's just in the moment, face to face, spitting out some sort of conditioned idea that we've got caught by, can be xenophobic, it can be racist, homophobic, misogynistic. It can be enlightened, it can be illuminating and brightening. It can be anything. It's not bad in and of itself to repost. The button's there for a reason. But how do we use it? How do we use it? So, where did this monk go wrong? Where did Unman catch him? Did he catch him? Did he catch him at all? Was there anything to be caught? So the light serenely shines over the whole universe. Does it? Does it for children who are separated from their parents in cages? Does it for four congresswomen who were told to go back to their countries? Unman skillfully swings the sword and cuts this monk off. Isn't this the work of Shochetsu or Chosetsu? There's an examination of this examination. He's demanding an original post. I'm not interested in your repost. I want an original post. I want new material from you. You know, not that this has been shared 7,000 times. You know, I don't want the internet superstar repost. I want you, your genuine self, to come forward. So, or genuine self, no self in that moment, which is really the only self, no self that can be in the moment, genuinely. And this practice that we're doing tonight is designed for that specifically. That's exactly what it's for. We might arrive here trying to find a little inner peace, trying to settle some of what's going on in our busy, crazy lives, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. You know, this practice is great for that too. But it's really good for kind of shaking free conditioned self, you know, the impulse to repost. You know, it gives us that space to see things as they actually are. I think of the first time I came to a meditation teaching, and it was at Karme Choling, a place set up by Chogyam Trungpa up in Vermont, in Bennett, Vermont. And and Tibetan horns blow in the background for Trungpa. And so I had sat down and I was like 16. I was a kid, you know, lots of pot smoking and, you know, hanging out and being a hippie kid. And I showed up with friends like, yeah, man, we're going to hang out with Trungpa. And I got a glimpse and it nauseated me, if that makes sense. So, you know, for some of you, maybe this is one of the first times you've sat on the cushion and you've encountered this unconditioned self. And encountering unconditioned self can be frightening. It can be a really scary feeling where you want to run back to the comfort of our conditioned responses. It's can be an unhinging feeling. It can also be a wildly liberating feeling. And after years of therapy, you can have both those feelings at the same time. Guess what? You can have more than one feeling at the same time. Took me about 30 years of therapy, but I found that out, that you can have that feeling of wanting to run away and profound bliss in the same moment. So it's great for unshaking this conditioned sort of self. And I want to be clear that it's not going to cure all bias. This is not, you know, the answer to your intrinsic biases that we all have on different levels for different things, some profound, some not so profound. Zazen is good, it's great for helping us with it, but it's not the be all and end all. It's not going to fix everything. We got a lot of work in this country and on ourselves, myself, as individuals, to look at all the areas that I get caught, that I get hung up a little bit. So when we sit down, Zazen, seated mind, when we actually sit our mind down, or the mind down, or mind down, when we sit down, when we put our tush on the cush, and we actually allow stuff to be as it is, and that unconditioned mind we can put on the back, or the conditioned mind, rather, we can put on the back burner for a second and let sort of just simmer down for a second, we start to see the interpenetration, the interdependence of all phenomena, you know? It takes a while. It makes me think about my obi that I was talking about and the Velcro on that. So I had that from the day I ordained, which was 2004, summer of 2004. And it's taken, you know, these 14 years for that Velcro to fully let go. There's really precious little stick left on that. The sweat and the dirt and the time has worn the sticking of that belt down. And it might be that Zazen takes that length of time too. It's not a, you know, quick medicine. I'm a nurse. It's slow release. It's not instant release. You're not going to get a high right away. You might have a little bit, but the real medication, you know, and we talk about the Buddha being the great physician. The real medication is a daily dose, and it really chips away at those sticking places. So, but when we're in that place, can there be that, you know, this place of interpenetrating interdependence, universality of all phenomena, where is their difference? Where is their homophobia? Where is their xenophobia? Where is their go back to your own country? Where is there another country? Where is there any separation when we're in that? And yet, we practice in a lineage that has patriarchs that have been misogynistic, racist, xenophobes. So, it's not like, you know, walking through this door gets us out of it. It's this moment after moment practice, continuous practice. There's no cure. There's no, I'm fixed, you know? It's constant. So, and it's dangerous. I think what I see most is this repost mind, this conditioned mind, you know, it's funny at best when I see my mind do that. Oh, I already have made a decision about this person, you know, in this interaction. You know, now with a little practice, I get to go, oh, there it's doing what it does. You know, it's making decisions, and I can stand back, you know, and give myself that space. It's not funny when people, and just recently a Mexican man, an older Mexican man, was beaten severely with a brick. There's like a 296% increase in hate crimes in every city that Donald Trump goes to and rallies in. You know, so I'm not here to be political. That's not what our tradition is about. It's really about finding your own way, and that way may be Republican. It may be different than my way, and yet it's a way that is open and welcoming. So it can be opening and welcoming and conservative or Republican, I believe. At least a few of our congresspeople came forth and renounced the actions of our president most recently. So it's okay to let things go. You know, there's a t-shirt that I just saw in New Paltz. There's this little t-shirt place I'm finding stuff, and it's got the Shakyamuni Buddha in a teaching posture, and underneath it, it says, "Let that shit go." And I think about it, I'm like, my first reaction was like, prophetizing on the Dharma, yada, yada. And then I was like, that's a great shirt. I need that shirt. And please feel free to remind me about let that shit go when I'm, in that loop of, getting stuck on the minutia of some bullshit thing that I'm stuck on. Be like, Joan, let it go. But when is it not skillful to let something go? When is it not skillful to let that shit go? And maybe not getting stuck doesn't always look like our Buddhist idea of this Teflon-y sort of not getting stuck. Maybe not getting stuck sometimes looks really big, like the Congress and the House sitting down and saying, we've got to call this what this is. You know, that this is racist, and it needs to be called racist. Maybe it's a little bit smaller, like the post I did today in response to a post in response to a repost that was, no, immigrants are not responsible for the rise in polio and other treatable diseases in our country. It's people not getting vaccinated. It has nothing to do with your country of origin. Actually, I can assure you as a nurse, the kids that come in from countries in South America usually have the best IM records of anybody, better than our American-born kids. So that's not the case, and I have evidence-based practice to respond to that. So that is incorrect. And I can say that that's incorrect and hopefully not rustle too many feathers. But however we respond, and the way things are in this world now, we must respond. We cannot not respond to what's going on. And I'm not going to tell you what that response is and how to respond, but this practice is about being responsive. It's about being awake and allowing your heart to respond. So if we do that with an unconditioned mind, a mind that isn't on the repost button, a mind that isn't already making up ideas and thoughts about things, or at least a mind that goes, oh, look, I'm making up a story about this that doesn't have anything to do with what's actually happening right now. And we do that, I do that at least, all the time. I'll be all the way down the road in that story and go, none of this actually happened. This is something I'm generating in my head about what happened. It's not what happened. So there is a poem that's attached to this this koan that Chosetsu wrote. And I should say that the name Cho is the family name. Setsu literally means unskillful. And he was a governor, a civil servant, Chosetsu. So he was being called out for reposting a government official's poem. If you can catch the sort of irony of that. But Chosetsu actually woke up down the road. So because his name was unskillful, a teacher held him to that and said, the great way is, has no unskillfulness in it. Where is Chosetsu? Where is unskillful? you know, and it was sort of the thing that made him wake up or something like that. I'm misquoting it. But this poem that he wrote was right after he had sort of had this awakening, and it's from Chosetsu. The light serenely shines over the whole universe. Ignorant, wise, and living creatures all are in my abode. When no thought arises, the whole is fully revealed. If the six organs move even a little, it is obstructed by clouds. If you cut off your ignorance, your ailment will increase. If you look for the truth, you are also in the wrong. Living in accordance with worldly affairs, you will have no obstructions. Nirvana and life and death are like colors in a dream. The light serenely shines over the whole universe. Ignorant, wise, and living creatures all are in my abode. When no thought arises, the whole is fully revealed. If the six organs move even a little, it is obstructed by clouds. If you cut off your ignorance, your ailment will increase. If you look for the truth, you are also in the wrong. Living in accordance with worldly affairs, you will have no obstructions. Nirvana and life and death are like colors in a dream.